we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core. Walker Wildman here with you, back in studio for this live edition of the program. I was out some last week, towards the latter part of the week, and I was in Washington, D.C. We do a tour of Williamsburg and Washington, D.C. every year. And so I was with over 100 of our listeners and our supporters there in Washington, D.C., touring our nation's capital. And we were doing so from an explicitly Christian perspective, talking about America's Christian history, talking about Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, John Adams. I mean, the list goes on. And the Christian influence on the early days of our nation. It's amazing to Abraham Lincoln. I mean, we went to the Lincoln Memorial, Jefferson Memorial, the Mount Vernon Estate, home of George Washington, went to National Archives, looked at the original copy of the U.S. Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, and the list goes on. And America's Christian history is rich, very rich. If you haven't been on one of those tours, I encourage you to do so. In 2025, we're going to be adding Boston to the list of tours in October of next year, just about a year out. We're going to be going to Boston for the first time and actually touring Boston and some of the surrounding areas and looking at America's Christian history in the Boston area. So look forward to that. If you want to know anything or rather about any of the tours in 2025, we're going to do Boston, we're going to do Williamsburg, we're going to do Washington, D.C. Lord willing, we're going to do Israel in 2026 when we can get it back on the books, but clearly we're not able to go there right now. We're going to hopefully do a makeup trip from earlier this year in February. But nonetheless, 2026 would be the next time that we have an opening for Israel. And, but if you want to know more, wildmangroup.com, just simply type in wildmangroup.com. And, that name, if anybody's been on a tour with us, that name, rings a bell because everywhere we go, they're like, hey, are you guys the Wildman Group? So, just wildmangroup.com and, check out all the dates and availability there for all of our tours in 2025. We are in Psalm chapter 129. Let me open this up. Psalm chapter 129. We're working our way through the book of Psalm. And I want to read verse 5, and this is in 129. May all who hate Zion be put to shame and turned backward. May all who hate Zion be put to shame and turned backward. How fitting. How fitting. We're going to talk about this extensively towards the latter part of this segment. And next segment, we're going to have on Ambassador Sam Brownback. He was the governor in Kansas, also a U.S. senator, and lastly, an ambassador. And we're going to be talking about what's going on in Israel. But before we do so, I do want to get to the Culture Warrior clip that we have in the can. And Culture Warrior is the name of the documentary, brand new documentary that we're going to have released in November about my grandfather, Don Wildman. The name of the documentary is Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency. It's a little over an hour and 45 minutes. I think it's an hour 47. I got to preview it. I didn't want to. I was going to wait till the theaters, but I got to preview it. They talked me into it last week, or 2 weeks ago. So, and it was everything that I thought it would be. Very, very good film. And it's not just about my grandfather, Don Wildman, although that's the majority of it. But it's the overarching story is about the culture war in America, the battle, of good versus evil, the spiritual darkness in this nation and kind of how we got to where we are today. It's a very, very interesting history of the last 30 or 40 years. So nonetheless, let's jump to this trailer. It's a little over 2 minutes long. This is A Culture Warrior, Don Wildman and the Battle for Decency.
Here in the Christmas season of 1976, I sat down one night to watch television.
As we started looking for something to watch, every channel had something inappropriate on it.
There was nothing good.
I became angry that night. I left the parish ministry and founded the National Federation for Decency.
And I remember people going, "You're going to do what now, exactly?"
Reverend Wildman.
Reverend Wildman.
The Reverend Donald Wildman.
Reverend Wildman says the show is too sexually suggestive.
We monitored television to see who was sponsoring the offensive shows.
It was totally covered from the networks to the advertisers.
Well, at first they wanted to ignore it, but then after a while they couldn't.
NBC said the boycott is an obvious attempt at intimidation, and we will let the people judge the fairness of this tactic.
I'd like to know what right you think you have to tell me what to watch on TV.
Send that question to the network, okay?
He used to say, "Well, let everybody think I'm dumb." Said, "That's to my advantage."
You know who sells more pornography than anybody else in America? 7-Eleven, your friendly family convenience store.
He stepped on a whole lot of toes early on, and they thought, I think, that they could just crush him.
Don told me that, "Ben, I've been sued by Penthouse and by Playboy."
Things were changing, and many people just sort of acclimated to it, and Don Wildman didn't.
The Last Temptation of Christ.
It was going to be a blasphemous movie about the life of Jesus.
We're not talking about the specifics, we're talking about the general theme.
What you did with Brother Don as the leader, you got on and hung on as best you could.
AVA is funded in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts.
So it was just vile stuff that was being funded by the government.
If we lose this cultural war, we're going to have a hedonistic, humanistic society.
He was going to be faithful and leave the success up to God.
He's had an uncanny ability to look down the road and see the impact of things that are happening today.
I'm not trying to be a prophet of doom. I'm trying to be honest with you.
When you see people live out their faith, you know there's something to it.
One person can make a difference.
Well, there you have it. CultureWarrior.movie is where you can watch that full trailer that I just played there. CultureWarrior.movie. This is going to be out online for viewing in mid-November, November 11th. For everyone to view. It's not going to be a traditional in-theaters release. It's going to be online, but this is very common nowadays to release things online. So that's the way we're going to do this. CultureWarrior.movie. It'll be available for anyone and everyone in mid-November to view. And we pray that this will really encourage and incentivize people to get engaged in what is the culture war in our nation. Speaking of culture war, Israel is in a hot war over their territorial integrity, over the existence of the Jewish state there in Israel. And this all started on October 7th of this year, or rather last year, when Hamas launched a terrorist attack on the people of Israel. And Israel has pretty much secured Gaza for the most part. There's still some fighting going on there, but not near what it was. Now Israel has moved to the northern front on the border with Lebanon. And the last few days, Israel is just hammering Hezbollah. And Hezbollah has fired several hundred, if not several thousand, missiles into Israel in recent days, within the last 7 days. And so Israel is defending its borders in on the northern front. But just to give you guys a little bit of background here, there's been over 250,000 residents displaced since the war just in the north. So just in the north, northern Israel, there's been over 250,000 residents displaced because of the threat of Hezbollah lobbing missiles into their homes in the northern part of Israel. So this is a big, big deal. The fact that you got nearly 250,000 people that can't live in their homes, that are living in hotel rooms for going on a year. I mean, this is a major, major problem, a major issue for the people of Israel. And that's one of many reasons that Israel is making a move on southern Lebanon, because these citizens need to be able to move back and live freely and securely in their residences and their homes. This is their property. This is their land. And they've been displaced for nearly 11 or 12 months. This understanding of war, the proper understanding of war really in our world and our country specifically, has really gone off the tracks. America has set a very poor example of what it means to actually win a war. I mean, we spent 20 years in the Middle East, really longer than that when you factor in the Gulf War and other conflicts in that area. But nonetheless, we spent at least two decades in the Middle East, and trillions of dollars, thousands of American lives, and we don't know what victory tastes like. We don't even know what victory looks like. And it's because America's leaders are trying to be the world's police instead of winning wars. And that's a problem. If we want to look at what it's like to win a war, we ought to look at Israel. They know what it's like to win a war. They're about to wrap this thing up in the North and the South. And so I want to play a clip just to give us some context here. I want to play clip one. This is an NBC report, and the NBC reporter just has to weigh in with his opinion on how bombing a terrorist leader is not quote-unquote justice. Listen to the slant here, clip one.
Among those commanders, Ibrahim Atkil, this is a Hezbollah commander who, according to the U.S., was responsible back in the 1980s, in 1983, was connected to the bombing of the Israeli, of the American embassy here and barracks. And we just actually heard from National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. He's described Ibrahim Atkil as having American blood on his hands, and says anytime a terrorist who has killed Americans is brought to justice, that is a good outcome. Of course, this, what is an assassination, is not bringing somebody to justice. He wasn't pressed on that.
So right at the end there, the NBC reporter just had to weigh in with his personal opinion that bombing and killing a terrorist is not quote-unquote bringing them to justice, replying to the U.S. response to this Hezbollah leader that was killed by the Israeli military. And by the way, this terrorist leader with Hezbollah was, as the reporter just mentioned, was responsible for not only the killing of the murder of Israeli lives, but also American lives, going back to the embassy bombing in back in the 90s. But at the end there, the whole comment about how this is not justice. Well, okay, let's talk about that, because our world has a warped and perverted view of justice. And when you look at this, morally speaking, this is clearly a just war. If anybody hasn't read up on just war theory and tried to weigh out as a Christian, what about war? Because our soldiers have to go and kill the enemy. So how do you handle that morally? Well, there's this thing called a just war. It is the war and the purpose. Is it a just cause? Is the purpose of the military conflict to protect the innocent, to do righteous, to do justice? And the answer with Israel on this example is absolutely yes. If this isn't a just war, then my friends, tell me what is. Because Jews were being slaughtered and have been slaughtered by the Muslims and the terrorists. And if Israel can't take out terrorist leaders that are responsible for hundreds of deaths, if not thousands, then what can they do? And this perverted view of justice is also what has caused American leaders, instead of killing the terrorist, we are bringing them back domestically to give them rights, to give them privileges, and give them trials that they do not deserve morally or legally.
twice a year, American Family Radio opens the phone lines to ask for listener support in our effort to promote godly values. We call it Share-a-thon. And it's also your chance to tell us your AFR story.
I was headed to work one morning and just happened upon the radio station, and I honestly don't think that my station has changed since then.
If God has used AFR in your life, we'd love to hear you tell us about it.
I've been a big help in keeping my mind straight and walking with the Lord. Thank y'all very much.
Your story can be an encouragement to our radio staff and to other listeners as well.
AFR has helped me out a lot. It helps me to keep in touch with the Lord. It's a good reminder that God loves us.
Call us at 877-876-8893 and give us a one-minute voicemail telling us your AFR story. That's 877-876-8893. And then listen for your voice during Share-a-thon, October 8th, 9th, and 10th on American Family Radio. At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program. Walker Wildman here with you on this edition of The Core, second segment now underway. Well, we were talking in the last segment, kind of wrapping up the segment, talking about what's going on in Israel. And this real disconnect with people and politicians and talking heads about what a war is and what the purpose of war is. And what does victory look like? And what are the reasons to go to war? And Israel is just exhibit A of what it means to protect your people, to protect your land. And they're getting a lot of flack, and they're getting a lot of criticism because they're simply serious about protecting their people and protecting their land. And the stakes are high for Israel. A lot of people they're not read up on this. They don't understand the small landmass that we're talking about here. When it comes to Israel. So a lot's at stake, and Israel should be supported. Of course, there's the biblical case for our support for the Jewish people, but there's also the rational case for supporting Israel as they defeat terrorists. Well, on with us now is the Honorable Sam Brownback. He was the governor of Kansas, also a senator from the state, and lastly, an ambassador, and currently he's the co-chair of the International Religious Freedom Summit and senior fellow at the Global Christian Relief. And he's with us now, Sam Brownback. Hey, Mr. Brownback, welcome to the program.
Glad to join you. I appreciate you guys. I've been on your radio network a number of times over the years, and just I love how you're hanging in there and continuing to fight the good fight and keep it up. We need it.
Amen. Appreciate the encouragement. Well, Mr. Brownback, let me ask you this. With what's going on in Israel, educate us, because a lot of our listeners, and hopefully not a lot of our listeners, but a lot of our country isn't studied up on this historical conflict over the last, 50, 60 years in Israel. And so there's this disconnect and lack of understanding of why Israel has to be on their A game when it comes to defeating terrorists. So bring us up to speed on this.
Well, the enemies of Israel, and that's basically everybody that surrounds them, not exclusively now, the Egyptians have come to peace, but the population probably still want Israel to disappear. But the other nation, the other groups around them want Israel gone, period. This is what's taking place right now is an existential threat to the Jewish people. And you've got now Iran that is behind all of this. Iran is calling the shots, and China is approving it, because Iran and China and Russia are in this axis of evil that's operating today. China makes it economically viable for Iran to be able to do this. Iran is providing the technology and the money to Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis and the drones. And they want to literally wipe Israel out. And if Israel doesn't aggressively fight back, they will be wiped out. That's really what is at stake. And it's, as you note, a small country. It's the only Jewish nation in the world. It is the Jewish homeland. It is where, obviously, Jerusalem is. And they have to fight. or they will literally be wiped out.
Once again, we have the Honorable Sam Brownback with us. Ambassador Brownback, the period of appeasement, or the strategy of appeasement, rather, this, I'm not going to say this started under Obama, because Bush had some of this problem too, even after 9/11. But nonetheless, and you could cite administrations, you know, decades ago that had this appeasement strategy. But nonetheless, more recently with the Biden administration, this appeasement strategy, where we give money, where we give Iran billions, and we try to negotiate with a terrorist. And we do all of this because I guess we're naive enough to think that the Islamic radicals want to enter some kind of peace deal with us or Israel or whatever the context is. This appeasement strategy is proven not to work. I mean, we went from record levels of peace with the Trump administration to now record levels of conflict. And the main thing that changed is the Democrats took the White House, and their appeasement strategy was kicked into high gear. So what's it going to take for U.S. leaders to understand that it doesn't matter how much you pay to the Iranian regime, these folks are bent on terror?
They're bent on terror, and they're bent on tearing us apart. They call Israel the little Satan and the United States the big Satan. I think what happened really is, you know, wars go to nations go to war, but those decisions are made by individuals, and they're made by individual leaders. And I think what Xi Jinping and Putin and the ruling Ayatollahs in Iran decided was, when Biden came into office and had that disastrous pull out of Afghanistan, is that they could take us and that this was the time to move. And Russia goes against Ukraine, and Iran goes against Israel, and China's threatening Taiwan, but they haven't officially moved yet, but they're threatening throughout the region, and funding or allowing the economic activity to be sufficient for these nations that they can finance all of it. Mm-hmm. Any appeasement we give to Iran will be money that will be given to terrorists and will find its way back into drones and bombs against Israel. And if not in the future, even against us.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, there's been recorded incidents of proxies using Iranian weapons against U.S. troops in the Middle East. And by the way, this wasn't called out during the debate a few weeks ago, but Vice President Harris blatantly lied when she claimed zero troops were in harm's way. Zero troops were in war zones. And the Pentagon announced today we're sending more troops to the Middle East. So it's documented we have hundreds, if not thousands, of troops in harm's way in conflict zones throughout the Middle East. Ambassador Brownback, I want to ask you one more thing, which is why we originally brought you on before this Israeli conflict really kicked into high gear. But you were debanked by J.P. Morgan back in 2022, yes. And this has been a thing you've been focused on for the last 2 years now, at least. And that is major banks canceling, cutting off, closing the bank accounts of people that they don't like politically or ideologically or otherwise. These are perfectly legitimate legal operations, but they just don't like them from an ideology standpoint. But talk about what you went through and how you've been working on that in recent years.
We formed the National Committee for Religious Freedom to fight for domestic religious freedom issues. I'd spent a lot of time fighting for international religious freedom, and now we're getting a lot more attacks on religious freedom and free exercise here at home. So we formed this National Committee for Religious Freedom, and within 45 days, we're debanked by Chase Bank. J.P. Morgan owns Chase Bank. They didn't give us a reason, wouldn't give us a reason at the time. They subsequently gave us five different reasons for it. They said they were concerned about money laundering, terrorist financing. They said it was bad customer service at one point. They said I'm a politically active figure. That wasn't quite the term that they used. But at the end of the day, they debanked us, and What we did, instead of going quietly, is we went public with being debanked. And it turned out there's been a lot of different groups. I was contacted by probably 15 to 20 different, mostly Christian-related groups or parachurch-type groups providing services or social active groups that the same thing had happened to. And most of them had just gone quietly and been debanked and then went and found another bank, and we found another bank. But this is wrong. This should not happen in this country. You have a right, a constitutional right in the First Amendment, to freely exercise your faith. We had Christians and Jews and Hindus and Muslims involved in this organization to stand for religious freedom for everybody in this country. And people shouldn't be getting debanked. We still don't know why, but we were. And so have a number of other groups been debanked.
Yeah, this is people don't think that this is widespread, but it's actually more widespread than you would think. We just may not hear about it. And to your point, when you came out publicly about you being debanked and your group that you had just started, other testimonies began to come in. We were I don't know if it's technically debanked because it was a credit card processing company back in, I think, 2021, but we were cut off by a company named Stripe. They're out of San Francisco, pretty uber liberal company. They may not be now, but they were at the time. But Stripe cut off all of our credit card processing overnight because they just didn't like the work that we did. And they cite these very vague terms of use that nobody can really understand. And they'll say, you know, look at page 7 of our terms of use. And on that page is like 2,000 words, and they don't cite a specific instance of us violating them. So we've experienced a similar account of this type of behavior going on, but debanking is really taking it to the next level, because how can you operate in 2024 if you don't have a bank account? I mean, this is very fundamental to operating. So we appreciate you speaking up on this. I know you've spoken at a few shareholder meetings, and you've partnered with our good friend Jerry Boyer on this as well. Ambassador Brownback, thanks so much for coming on the program. Appreciate you speaking up on these important issues.
Happy to do it. And if anybody's interested in following up on any of this, go to our website, ncrf.org, National Council for Religious Freedom.org, and sign in and sign up. We need people to get in this fight. God bless you guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks so much, Ambassador Brownback. That's ncfr.org, National Council on Religious, RF. Sorry about that, Bobby was flagging me down. ncrf.org, that's the National Council for Religious Freedom. That was Ambassador Sam Brownback on the program. So we'll get that URL linked on the rundown, so you can check that out on the show notes. And by the way, Anybody who hears me mention a URL or our guests share a link on the show notes, we post that each and every day. So if you go to AFR.net, the AFR app, or even the podcast on your various podcast platforms, we'll get those URLs up on the show there, on the show notes. One more clip I want to play before we wrap up this segment. Leon Panetta was on, former CIA director, was on CBS. And folks, to understand the warped thinking when it comes to war, you have to get into the minds of the people that have been in charge of our nation for the last 30, 40 years. And Leon Panetta is one of them, former CIA director. But listen to him define what Israel did in their war effort with blowing up of pagers as terrorism. Clip 2.
Exploding pagers and walkie-talkies on the scale that we saw this past week, killing dozens and injuring thousands, including children, some viewed as a deception one step too far. The United Nations labeled the operation a violation of international law, and it's raised some eyebrows here at home, too.
The ability to be able to place an explosive in technology that is very prevalent these days and turn it into a war of terror, really, a war of terror. This is something new.
Is it terrorism?
I don't think there's any question that it's a form of terrorism.
Former Defense Secretary and former Director of the CIA, Leon Panetta, wasted no words in describing what he fears may be the result of letting this particular genie out of the box.
Well, that was a CBS report. And this, folks, is called warped thinking. This is warped thinking. And this is what happens when you don't have a moral standard, when you don't believe in the Bible, and you don't really know what right and wrong is, and you treat everybody as equal actors, as rational actors, and that's just not the case here. Textbook terrorism definition is the unlawful use of violence and intimidation, especially against civilians. Important word there, my friends. Civilians. In the pursuit of political aims. And this is not, I would say, a political aim. Trying to defend your territorial integrity and your people is not political aims. That's practical national defense aims, folks. But this is not terrorism. And if we're going to start changing the definition, I mean, the Democrat Party, they're the party of changed definitions. I mean, that's all these folks do is change the definition. We don't know what a woman is. We don't know what a recession is. We don't know what terrorism is. Folks, this is not terrorism, and we can't let him get away with this because this is a problem. The problem is they start changing definitions, and it's called propaganda, and this is what the communists and the socialists do. This is what the dictators do. They change definitions, and they create propaganda, and before you know it, you and me are the enemies. But this is actually the case now. This isn't something that's going to happen in the future. This is the case now. This is why these same folks call you and me a threat to democracy, autocrats, theocrats, and the list goes on. But now Leon Panetta, folks, this is a former U.S. official that is calling Israelis' attack against the terrorist terrorism. Okay, so now Israel can't defend itself? So we went from Israel should protect its people and its land to Israel has the right to defend itself, which, by the way, is kind of a very ambiguous, weak statement. Israel has the right to defend itself. Okay, so you're telling that statement infers that Israel ought to be on their heels on defense 24/7. They can't advance. They can't proactively protect its citizens. Instead, they have to just be on defense all the time. They can defend themselves, but if they have to take any offensive action to prevent casualties, no, you can't do that. You can just defend yourself. To now calling what Israel did to attack Hezbollah terrorism. Let me note one fact, folks. The attack that Israel launched against Hezbollah was against Hezbollah terrorists, not civilians. This is not terrorism.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to our last segment here of the program today. This is the edition of The Core. Walker Wildman here with you. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can just type in At the Core and click the subscribe button on whatever podcast platform you use. And as I mentioned in the last segment, we do upload the different links to the subjects that we talk about throughout the program in the show notes section. So you can find that really wherever you listen to podcasts. There should be a show notes section under the description of today's show, and you can click through there and get all those links. And I did give out the wrong URL for Sam Brownback's organization, but we're going to drop the correct link on the show notes section of today's program. But nonetheless, jumping to our next guest that we have on this segment, we have on Michelle Exner. She's Director of Federal Affairs at the Parents Defending Education. She's also a senior advisor at Parents Defending Education as well. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Well, Michelle, for those who have not heard of Parents Defending Education, bring us up to speed. Tell us a little bit about the organization.
Absolutely. So we are a national grassroots organization that launched back in 2021. Big issue at the time was obviously closed schools. And then, you know, as parents got a glimpse of what was being taught, then the next issue that we transitioned to was exposing some of the toxic, divisive content that some of these activists / teachers and administrators are trying to push into our classrooms. And so we are looking to restore neutrality and common sense back in classrooms. By empowering parents, we want to make sure that we are a resource for them, and exposing the bad stuff happening. We either do a comprehensive investigation and reporting that we push out. We also work at the state and federal level to ensure that that policymakers at every level of government are aware of what's happening in schools. And essentially, our bottom line is making sure that parents and students have the education that they deserve to have.
Well, Michelle, once again, we're talking to Michelle Exner. She's with the Parents Defending Education as a director of federal affairs and a senior advisor there. You mentioned off the air as we were prepping for the show about this term called restorative justice. And I've got to admit, it's a rather new phenomenon for me to look into. But apparently it's been around for a while. But tell us what restorative justice is.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's this idea that when it comes to student discipline, the primary objective, right, is to bring reconciliation between the offender and the victim, right, as the ultimate objective of administrators in schools. So the goal is to have these individuals between the offender, the victim, and others involved in the incident and have a conversation, right? And we will admit that this practice is applicable in certain scenarios, right? I think that teachers and administrators should always start at the lowest level, depending, of course, on what has transpired, on what the student has allegedly done in school. If it's a disagreement among students, and perhaps at the lowest level, this would make sense. But of course, the problem becomes when restorative justice, right, is used and applied to disruptive and violent behavior in classrooms. Because what happens then is now this becomes a safety issue for both the teachers, the staff at the school, and also the students in the classroom, right? And so huge issue for parents, and it's something that we should be paying attention to because there has been an increase in these instances. So according to a report published by the Educators School Safety Network, showing the numbers of these violent incidences from just the last academic year from 2023 to 2024, there was a stark increase. So from when they started tracking these numbers back in 2016 to the most recent last academic year, that was a 300% increase of the number of violent incidents. And as far as comparing pre-pandemic, post-pandemic to where we are now, that number is 83%. So really staggering, and frankly, we're moving in the wrong direction. So this subject should be very alarming and concerning to parents.
Well, what are some of the other things that you guys are seeing in schools? I mean, this is what you do, is focus on education and parents, of course, being involved in education and defending the right of their child to have a quality education, free of, you know, these heavy-handed political or ideological moves, especially by the left. But what kind of trend are you seeing as far as impact goes, and maybe some of these districts and students waking up to the drift that's been going on in recent decades?
Sure, absolutely. And you're talking specifically to restorative justice topic or kind of other issues at large?
Well, more broadly, okay. Obviously, the Loudoun County, you know, is like exhibit A of what happens when parents get involved about yes. woke policies being taught to their woke ideologies being taught to their children. But is that momentum still continuing, or where are we today?
You know, I think that the engaged parents are still paying attention. We're still, you know, we've got a network of either parent advocates or parent advocate groups or individuals that are paying attention to these issues, right? They have an ear to the ground. They're making sure that these issues are brought to the public's awareness, right? And I think one of the biggest recent issues, aside from the restorative justice topic that we're looking at, is this epidemic of parental exclusion policies, right, that we've seen take hold across the country. And I think California, and it should be shocked to none of your listeners or yourself, that is ground zero for these insane policies. And so when I mean parental exclusion policies, it is policies in schools that are meant to essentially keep information from parents, specifically when it comes to the child shows up to school and says they want to be identified, he or she wants to be identified as a different pronoun. There's no requirement for that school to then relay that information to parents. And that's a big deal. That's a huge deal. Parents should absolutely be brought into the loop when those conversations are happening in school. You know, unfortunately, Governor Newsom over the summer decided to make, or I think at the beginning of the school year, decided to make it a law that there was no requirement, that there would be no requirement to relay that information to parents. I think you saw a district already push back on that. You saw parents voice their objections. And so there, I think they're going the legal route to object to that. And so those are a significant trend that we're seeing, incredibly problematic, right? Schools should not be moving to keep information from parents.
Yeah, I think this is a new fight. I mean, we can fight on multiple fronts when it comes to fighting for our children, and we should. We ought to be, you know, not just narrowly focused on what we're fighting for. But this secrecy push, which you guys rightly call the parent exclusion move, is not only is it in regards to transgenderism. I mean, there's been multiple reports of parents being kept out of the loop when it comes to their child maybe having gender dysphoria issues or other kinds of identity issues, and then the school is kind of catering to and fostering in this direction, and the parents are completely left out of the conversation. But this not only applies to the issue of gender dysphoria and transgenderism, but it can apply to anything that children are dealing with. We know that depression levels are at record highs. Anxiety levels are at record highs because of the breakdown of really our culture. And in many of these young people come from very broken homes, which is an underlying issue as well. But yeah, the excluding of parents from the conversation is a very big deal. And parental rights and involvement in education has to be at the forefront. That's the only way things function right, is when parents are involved in the education of their children. Michelle, once again, we've been talking to Michelle Exner. Tell us your website and how folks can read more about your work.
Absolutely. So we are defendinged.org. So we encourage all of your listeners to go on there and see all of the fantastic work that my colleagues are doing to, again, empower parents, provide resources for them to help them fight these important fights at their level, and also to expose the bad stuff happening, because there is no better strategy than sunlight, right? If you expose it, if parents and communities are aware of what's happening, chances are that a lot of people are going to take issue with it. Even the independents and some of the left of center who realize, you know what, schools should be teaching math, reading, and science, and this is completely out of the scope of what classrooms should be teaching.
Absolutely. Hey, Michelle, thanks so much for coming on. Keep up the good work.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Michelle Exner. She's Director of Federal Affairs at the Parents Defending Education Organization. And their website is simply defendinged.org, defendinged.org. And they do a lot of good work there, really exposing what's going on in our public schools around the country. And they even have a list of school district transgender student policies. And they kind of list out different districts and how they handle this, the issue of children and gender dysphoria and transgenderism. So a lot of important work there. And this gets folks, the issue of our children, the topic of our children and education, this really gets at the heart of what's going on in our country. I mean, if we really want to have an impact, and I mention this often, but folks, we're not fighting a four-year battle or a five-year culture war. Folks, we got to be in this for the long haul. we got to be in this for the long haul. That's why I cringe when we talk about this is the most important election in our lifetime. Well, you might can make a pretty strong case that it is, and if so, that's fine. But that's not the point. The point is we don't need to send a message. We don't need to send a signal that depending on how this election goes or that election goes or this goes, that it's a win or loss. That's the problem, okay? All elections are important. Some are more important than others. That's what I say. And you can use facts and stats to back that up. But either way, no matter how a certain election goes or a certain movement goes, folks, we have to be in this culture war for the long haul. And back to my point, the root of what we're dealing with in our society and in our culture today is we have calamity after calamity after calamity, casualty after casualty when it comes to the breakdown of the family. Children are being raised, if they're being even raised at all, they're being brought up in very broken situations, very godless situations. I mean, we can talk about divorce. We can talk about this homosexual, quote-unquote, marriage where children are being adopted and fostered into homes with two dudes or two ladies. Think about the damage that is done there. And then we have just out of wedlock births. But this failure to properly disciple, educate, train, raise, nurture generations is what we're seeing play out today. I mean, when someone's 30 years old and they don't have a good work ethic, well, I wonder how that happened. When someone's 25 years old and they think it's okay to have an abortion, well, I wonder how that happened. When someone's 22 years old and they think that it's okay to murder somebody else, well, I wonder how that happened. And the list goes on. We have to get the family back. And we can fight on multiple fronts. We ought to be fighting on multiple fronts. But if we overlook the most, from a proximity standpoint, the closest front is the home front. And if we miss that, we are neglecting our duty to train, disciple, and raise children in the fear and the admonition of the Lord. And you're doing yourself and your children a disservice because it's going to make all the other battlefronts 10 times more difficult to win. The average person develops their worldview, I think, from like 6 months to 13 years old. Yes, 6 months old to 13 years old. I think over 90% of people have their worldview developed by the age of 13, and I would argue more develop their worldview before that, when they're 3, 4, 5 years old. But how you train, disciple, and nurture your children from the very early days of their life shape the outcome of how they will live, how they will conduct themselves, and how they will view this world. So out of all the fronts that we're fighting on, and we ought to be fighting on multiple fronts as Christians from a spiritual perspective, we cannot neglect to make sure that we raise children to fear, respect, and admire God.
Preborn celebrates that Roe versus Wade has been overturned. Roe has been responsible for the slaughter of over 63 million babies. Now the decision to abort a child will be left in the hands of the states, and sadly, abortions will continue in the most liberal states. Over the past 16 years, Preborn has positioned their clinics in the top abortion cities where 50% of abortions occur. Preborn's work of saving babies' lives continues at an even greater level as they save babies' lives and defend their centers from the radical hate groups who want to shut them down. Preborn's response is dependent on you, the pro-life community. Be a part of rescuing lives and changing hearts for Christ. $28 sponsors one ultrasound, and $140 will help to rescue five babies' lives. Dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or go to preborn.com. All gifts are tax deductible.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.